The International Digital Dental Academy Podcast. Welcome to the future of dentistry.
Well, welcome everybody. Tonight we have a very special occasion. We have a melting of minds here for people all around the world, watching people from all around the world. So you have obviously ourselves from the IDDA, and we have the pleasure of chatting tonight to the amazing Christian Coachman, the fantastically 3D printed talented Wally Rennie, and the legend as a guest star that is August Livriere in 3D printing as well. So welcome everybody. Hope you all are ready for an explosive session of geekery, which I'm sure it'll be. How are you all doing, guys? You all good?
Fantastic.
Good.
All good. All good, guys.
Welcome everyone.
The main thing, really, we're all here for is obviously ahead of the 3D printing conference that's coming on the 2nd and 3rd of October. But in general, it's really a good time to talk to really world leaders in everything smart design and 3D printing, who see things not only at the coalface as you use this technology in day to day, but also, you know, you guys, I don't think there's anybody better in the world who will be able to see the technology behind the scenes before it's even released. I mean, August even has his little VR headset there. He's working on things we can't even talk about, huh? So, you know, what is 3D printing to you all? Let's start with, where is it now? Where is it heading? What is the thing that you love the most? So let's do the honors of Christian first. Whereabouts?
I can start with a little simple story. I remember the day I heard a story about NASA explaining that every time they would send a rocket into the sky, to increase the chances of success, they had to have every little single key piece of the rocket as a duplicate inside the rocket. So if everything would go wrong, they could replace that piece.
Wow.
And the day that printers were invented, they were able to actually, just through a digital connection, to not have anything on board and be able to address the problem from the land, and the engineers from land identifying where the problem is, designing the solution, designing the tool, designing the little piece again, and sending the file back into the space to the rocket to print. All they needed to have was a printer inside the rocket to actually print every little piece that was needed and then use it. So for me, it was like, wow, this is so obvious, right? And if you translate this to dentistry, you realize that every smart practice needs a printer to connect this practice to any corner of the world. If you have a printer, if you have a scanner, of course, and a printer, you can work with anybody anywhere in the world. You can translate any idea that was built through collective intelligence, any solution, any guide, appliance, device, stent, restoration, anything you can do in-house based on the know-how of somebody that is outside your practice. So for me, philosophically, and I'm starting in a philosophic mode here, it makes total sense it's something obvious that everybody should invest on a printer. Everybody should have a printer. It doesn't matter how much you think you're going to use tomorrow. If you don't have a printer, you're behind the curve, and you need to start this journey as soon as possible.
100% agreed.
Yeah. I must say, I totally agree there. Just couldn't work without printers now, could we? And it's still so few practices that have taken the step fully into 3D printing and digital dentistry. And then we haven't even started talking about AI and all these other applications. August? What's your thought on that?
I mean, I'm certainly not as eloquent as Christian, but one of the things that fascinated me about 3D printing was, I got involved with CIRAC back in the day, same as a lot of people here, and it was like 3D, right? But it kind of wasn't, you know, you had a 3D object behind a 2D screen, and there was kind of this disconnect between something caught behind the screen and something I could actually hold. And I did a study club with this really old-ass prosthodontist. And the prosthodontist was like, I don't like 3D printing because I like to feel the stone. And it was kind of creepy, right? And I kind of got it because, like, we did, like, when C-Rack first kind of came out with their lab connection in lab, they actually started chair-sided and went to in lab. It was like, hey, I can send stuff to a lab, and then they send me back this crown, but I have no context, right? There's no next-door neighbor teeth. I don't know if the crown is big or the crown is small. And then when 3D printing came out, it was like, oh, whoa, this weird thing behind the screen, I can now touch like the creepy prosthodontist and, you know, look at it. And so that's what got me excited initially with 3D printing and with VR and AR. So to be able to take things and put them in, you know, a format where I can look at with my eyes. And I think where we're heading in 3D printing is really exciting because it takes this obscure design world and it gives you something you can print and hold in your hand. I reached out to Wally, Smile Design Extraordinaire, the other day. I got a patient, I'm designing something in ExoCAD Smile Creator. And it was really funny, I thought it looked real good. And then I printed it out, and I'm like, God, this looks like shit. So, you know, having that ability to pick something up and looking at it in your hands is I think, is going to wow a lot of people.
Yeah. What about you, Wally?
So I think, you know what, one of the good things that you mentioned there, August, is that you started off with CEREC. Okay, now, my experience with it is I've been doing CEREC for a long time as well, since 2004, but it's been a big uptake in the United States, but not so big in other parts of the world. There's a lot of skills that have to be developed for it. And apart from just the understanding the milling parameters, there's also the staining, the glazing, the working with materials. And there's a lot of practice that actually haven't taken that step. They've got to look at how they get themselves into the digital modern world. And I think 3D printing brings a giant step into that. Wally, do you want to elaborate on that? Because obviously you've had the experience of working both in milling and in 3D production.
Yeah, you know, first...
I think you might have dropped out there. Wally, can you hear us okay?
That, it's not going to go away anymore.
This is me that's dropped out.
But
I can hear you fine, Wally.
Yeah.
It's working, okay.
Yeah. I said Patrick that can't hear us.
Patrick's properly.
We can hear you, Wally. Carry on.
He has complications.
Yeah, turn on your hearing aid.
Milling's great. We can't say that that's going away anytime. But what 3D printing is to me is a full-blown production laboratory at my fingers. I think of printing a little differently. It's more of a permanent solution, less temporary for me. I'm printing veneers, inlays, crowns, dentures. And to think about how much technology I would have needed in the past to achieve that, burnout, then, you know, injection mold machines, dentures, all these types of equipment were still a giant laboratory.
It was probably just cutting out a little bit on my end for Wally then. Did it cut out for you guys?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, maybe a microphone, Wally, if you've got a different one to chip
back on it.
But we've got a few questions that we've wrapped up. Do you want to start off, Q?
Yes. So for all of you guys, and I mean for me personally, and I'm going to start it with more of a statement, where 3D printing is worth its weight in gold, and especially as in more complicated cases, especially because I'm more into smile designs and trying to get the aesthetics right. And like August was saying, once you print it and you put it in the patient's mouth, or you print a model and you have a look at it, you can actually see how good or how bad your design is. Have any one of you got any examples of complex cases where 3D printing has played a crucial role in achieving the success of your treatments?
Should I talk or?
August, yeah, you start.
Yeah, so I think a few years back, a charity clinic in Phoenix, Arizona reached out to me to kind of figure out a way to get digital hybrids to work. And I think one thing that 3D printing has really helped me is if you send a case to a lab to manufacture, let's say a PMMA temporary hybrid, they charge you money, right? And so in US dollars, they usually charge about $2,000 an arch. And just the ability that we've had to 3D print hybrids, which are, you know, a full mouth case of implants, and figure out, hey, it doesn't fit. You know, maybe my scan was wrong, or gosh, you know, the teeth are too big or too small. And to work through all those iterations, as Christian was saying, kind of like prototypes on the rocket, you know, you can change that initial STL before you go to milling, if milling is going to be your final thing. So it saves me, and saved me, you know, probably tens of thousands of dollars in lab fees alone, just
easily
out.
Paid off the printer.
Yeah, I practice in LA, and we all have high maintenance patients, but LA is famous for very old people that want to look 20. And so you really got to work through some of their expectations, and it's nice to do that in a temporary material.
I can add on this topic. I think August touched a very important topic where printing brings a lot of value. When we're talking about full implant arches, you know, printing is all over. Our workflow with full arches, you know, depends. It can be so smooth if you do the complete guided process, right? And a full implant arch surgery can have up to 7, 8, 9, 10 different printed devices, you know, stackable guides and positioning guides and pin guides and bone reduction guides and implant guides and then tooth reduction guides and the piece that comes on top that fits over the teeth to allow you to position precisely to keep the jaw relationship, keep the vertical dimension, keep the aesthetic design that you plan so carefully on the computer. So the transferring of the beautiful project of the computer into the mouth depends on all these appliances. It's really, when we manufacture everything, it's a full box of little devices that needs to fit over each other and fit with precision. And the day that printing was affordable and precise, it became like a dream coming true. You know, it's just a revolution, you know, something that you thought that would never happen, and suddenly everything is happening right there at the surgery, and in 3-4 hours you do a full upper and a full lower, and the patient comes with a few remaining periodontic teeth that are ready to be extracted, and you can just do the whole process and deliver a new upper and lower on a precise vertical dimension, precise jaw relationship, great bite, great dental facial aesthetics. You know, I remember the old days doing these full arches. You would capture a prosthesis and the midline was all over and the cant was all over and everything was out of position. And it was a nightmare, right? And through 3D planning and printing, you know, people talk a lot about 3D planning and software. If you don't have a printer, And if you're waiting for a lab from the other side of the country or the world to ship these things to you, it makes no sense because it's
doesn't
so simple
sense.
To do chair side. It's so simple to do chair side. The other example is the test drive experience that didn't exist in dentistry. The opportunity of test driving whatever. Why? Because printing makes things so fast and so cheap that you can test drive anything. You can test drive denture before you ask your lab to manufacture a very expensive full zirconia implant arch, right? Because one of the main reasons why these cases go wrong is because the bite registration is wrong and there's nothing the lab can do. And if you print a denture chairside and you try it, you're going to identify that before manufacturing anything that is expensive, right? The same thing with full mouth rehabilitations over teeth. The fact that you can print tabletops and test drive a new jaw relationship and bond these things so cheap, almost for free, almost zero cost, right? Chairside.
And it saves you, Christian. It's not just the time or the expense it saves you in the surgery. I'll give you a really good one that ties in for you with DSD, right? So, I mean, we usually do a lot of stuff in-house. You all know, everybody knows, like Wally with Exacad. And me and Quintus and Patrick, you know, we do a lot of cases together with Chris and that. But me and Patrick especially, we work in London together on a Monday. It's kind of like an odd couple thing where we nurse each other and, you know, we each have a bit of fun, sit on the balcony and drink a cup of tea. But we, one of the nice things is we support each other. But that doesn't go far enough in some cases. And part of the beauty of, you know, ever since obviously we did the DSD course with you guys over in Madrid, for special cases where you need that little bit of a multidisciplinary approach, when we send things over to the DSD lab to get a bit of not just a mock-up, but a whole treatment plan set up with different clinical specialists over there that, you know about. And by the way, that's what DSD day, the first day, is going to be massively mind-changing if you are looking forward to that day. But the point I'm making is, one case in particular we've had recently was an absolute proof of what you've both just said, where we had a lady, she wanted a smile design. She wanted composite bonding, where if we would have just gone ahead, designed it ourselves on Exacad or whatever, placed that, it wouldn't have looked right, no matter how nice we would have got those restorations right. And the reason being, she really needed orthodontics. Now, we could have done, you know, that ourselves, sent it to DDA lab and done aligners or whatever. But the problem is, when you've just started seeing that patient, in a way, it's like the same way in the AI now with radiography. It's something else to give that patient a bit of advice as well as you, that when we show the patient a presentation to show her the difference with her teeth aligned with the mock-up or her teeth now with the mock-up, she can not only see it, but we can print it, try it in. And she very quickly realized that doing just a mock-up to that teeth shape that she wanted, that she liked, wasn't enough. The teeth needed to be forward. The teeth needed to be in a position. And there is no way that we could have done that, even with just virtually moving them on the computer, even with ClinCheck or whatever. She wouldn't have appreciated it without printing that mock-up and actually placing it in her mouth. So, I mean, that could have been, you know, a disaster, because she hated it. And she was so anti straightening her teeth before that if we would have gone ahead and just done it, that would have been a complaint, or she would have been coming back saying, look, I'm not happy, let's start again. And then that puts you in an awkward position. I don't know what things are like over in Madrid with dentists with things, but, you know, in America, I'm sure you guys will have the same issues we have in the UK. We want to avoid that sort of thing at all costs.
It's the test drive.
It helps.
Right? You're making 100%. The test drive affordable. You're making the test drive affordable and allowing you to create this experience with the patient.
Yeah. And Joe, all credit to the three of you, know, with each of your different things. I don't think that, I don't know, maybe you do, but I don't think the three of you will appreciate, you know, with Wally showing his, you know, things that he teaches with, you know, 3D printing and videos, you know, DSD, this is what it is, August, you know, with teaching. I don't think you guys appreciate how much you're making a difference, not only to dentist lives, but patients' lives around the world. That makes a big
huge
difference.
Huge impact. And I think especially on the test drives, like you said, Adam, you know, this lady, she could have had four different test drives and could have just gone through everything. And it just gives them all the different options. I think that also brings us on to another really interesting point that we mentioned briefly here, that we have so many new materials to choose from, both for temporary situations and also long-term temporaries and permanent materials. We're looking forward to a lot of new developments with the material side as well. And I know there's a lot of things planned that they haven't released yet. I'm not sure how much you guys can say about it yet, but has anyone got any opinions on this?
Got to shout this to Wally.
I think Wally.
Yeah, I think that's got to be one for Wally.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, that's good.
So, you know, I think we've come so far with the resin materials, and we're at a renaissance period where the materials are getting better and better every month that goes on. The permanent resins exceed the mechanical properties of milled resins in almost every aspect. And fracture toughness, flexural strength, those types of parameters are better And it's because millions of dollars of research are being pumped into R&D for new novel oligomers that are not 80-year-old legacy methacrylate chemistry. So it's really exciting. I think in the next 5 years, we will be at the point where we won't need to mill final hybrids all on X prosthetics. We're already at the point where definitive single unit crowns, little inlays and onlays specifically, are very nice to print. I have do 3D printed veneers to replace all my direct resin veneers. And 3D printed dentures are every bit as good, I think, as milled or cold packed or injection molded dentures. So we're getting there. We're so close.
It is close. It's just time, unless the robots come and kill us. I'm not going to talk about that today.
Yeah.
Let's think
for you, actually. You know, I mean, you've been absolutely pivotal in the development of digital workflows at a very early stage. And of course, very motivational. I mean, all of us actually learned our basics of 3D printing with you, really. And that's really catapulted us to see the benefits of it and move forward. What would you say to people who are sitting on the fence thinking, should I really take this step? And am I actually going to benefit from it? How would you summarize something like that for somebody who's sitting on the fence?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You gauge sort of how much a machine in your practice impacts it when it breaks down. And so we have a bunch of 3D printers and our network totally went out. And I know you can access printers with a USB stick, but we, for like a day, we couldn't 3D print. And it was just so horrible, right? It was just like, what am I doing working with like sticks and rocks now? It's like, you know, I need my 3D printer. So I think that dentists, you know, are sometimes reluctant to get into things because technology seems intimidating. But all dentists are motivated by money, or at least most dentists are motivated by money. And what I really find in my practice is I don't think I've ever had a device that paid and continuously pays for itself like 3D printing. So for me, initially, it was guides. I saved about $3,000 a month, US dollars, on guides. Then making my own aligners, I saved probably about $6,000 or $7,000 a month. And, you know, I initially bought a Form 2 printer, which was $3,500 US. That paid for itself in like 2 weeks. Yeah. So, you know, if dentists realized how much money they would save or make with 3D printing, that they would get involved quicker and, you know, dust off their little small brains and start to kind of learn this stuff, because it's really not that hard. I mean, I taught you guys and I didn't know shit.
I'll tell you what, guys.
I think you guys need to cover this topic very well in this meeting, the return on investment, ROI, you know, because one thing is to show a bunch of amazing solutions and beautiful outcomes and everything you can do, but at the end of the day, you guys mentioned it is about money, right? It is about money. It needs to make sense financially. Yeah. And I think you guys have the experience to prove the concept, you know, and compare life with and without, and what do you need to do to get this return on investment. I think that's a huge topic. And I'm 100%. Sure we're going to cover this very well there. People need to leave these 2 days with a very clear image of a workflow, a system, an implementation method, a way to onboard their staff. By the way, this is another great topic. We need to show people that the dentist cannot be the one running the whole thing. And if you have a staff that understands the power of this technology and can do most of the work and can run the show for you, you can be just sitting and watching and enjoying and taking advantage of it, right? So return on investment and team onboarding are two key. So why the team needs to accept this? How can the team be a happier team, more proud, because they are using printing technology?
Do you know what?
I think that's a very good point, actually. Sorry, Adam, butting in. I think the other important thing that has to be highlighted is the predictability of treatment using these technologies. And that's a very big thing, not just for the dentist's confidence, but also for, you know, when you're telling a patient what's achievable, you can deliver on it visibly, which is what you were saying about, you know, printing something, having it in front of you and showing a patient. I think the important thing is the journey for the patient becomes a lot clearer about what the outcome will be, purely based on the fact that they have a visible and a tangible option to actually understand what you're saying. We all know when we talk to patients before digital era, it was like, yes, I'm going to do this. And they're going like this and they're saying, what the heck is this man actually saying to me? You know, they completely get lost. So obviously the predictability is a major factor in the determination of moving into the digital workflows with 3D printing.
I think it's not just that.
Wally, do you want to elaborate
on
that?
Well, before you pass on to Wally there, Chris, I think an important thing for Wally to follow that on with is,
okay,
the three of you guys and us, we work with the more expensive printers. And you know what I'm going to say with this now, Wally? We work with the more expensive printers. We all work with different printers, whether it's Formlabs, whether it's Asiga, whether it's Accuretta, Invisitech, Desktop Health, SprintRay, whatever, okay? Validated printers with validated workflows, okay? And the question that I'm going to follow on from what Chris has said to you, Wally, that I think is something which is really important for the audience to hear, is we know, I know from the study that I've done, you know from the studies you've done, there's no difference in accuracy between whatever printer. The difference is what's possible in the accuracy of the end result with clinically related resins, with the workflow, with processing the products that you use in terms of resin and finishing, and how that relates to the printing. So clarify for the audience, if you can, to follow on from Chris, why they should look at a validated workflow and why that's important, no matter which of the brands they go for, to make sure that they get predictable results.
Don't give away too much. They need to come to Mallorca.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah, well, you know, we need to decide, are we going to be medical professionals or hobbyists? You know, we're putting things in people's mouths, and that's serious. We're putting them in permanently. You know, I bonded 10 veneers in yesterday, and I use validated workflows with a proof curing unit and a proof printer. And I know the mechanical properties are maximized with that combination. When we were in the past printing models and maybe little trinkets, it didn't really matter. Nothing was being implanted in a person permanently. But now I think it's very serious. We need to look at cleared, validated, tested workflows that are safe for our patients, because we're venturing outside of the world of temporaries and we're venturing into permanent prosthetics. These prosthetics need to be safe. I hear stories all the time. Oh, the printed thing, they broke, or they're staining, they're discoloring. Well, what cure box did you use? I don't know, I have this nail curing light. Or what printer did you use? Well, I have this $100 printer and I paired it with this and this resin's not validated. And I'm like, well, that's probably why you're seeing all these issues that I don't see.
Yeah.
So I think it's super important.
And it's important as well to distinguish, I think, again, see if you guys agree, the difference between printing models, printed things that we don't put in the patient's mouth and things that go in the patient's mouth. Because again, little example for you. A student who was printing their own guides, and he was having trouble with the sleeves fitting in the guides, and he's just using, you know, a base printer. But the problem is that there was no predictability. He said sometimes they were fitting, sometimes they weren't. And I said, look, just do yourself a favor, get yourself a good validated printer where you know that everything is dialed in, because I don't have that problem. And it's the same thing. It's that what you're paying for is not the ability of a printer to print something that the other one can't do. And that's, I think, where this whole argument is. And it's really a baseless argument, because, to me at least, because at the end of the day, they can print it. That's not a question. It's how well they print it, how well they post-process it, and how well that lasts in the patient's mouth. Yeah.
Biocompatibility.
I'll maybe go maybe a little more controversial. But, I mean...
That's what we love.
they're so freaking cheap. I mean, they'll bitch about, you know, spending, you know, $2,000 more on a wash cure station. You know, and yet they go home in their really nice car. Like, they wouldn't, like, drive in, like, a little 1972 Yugo. Right. And so, but for some reason, they're trying to save.
Okay,
like,
really cheap tires.
Give yourself a little luxury, right?
Yeah.
So when I like you guys started with 3D printing, I saw, and Wally has the best little name for these Fisher Price printers.
We're gonna get hate mail, don't.
When I started out, there's one called the Wanhao, and then the early Frozen models, and it was like, okay, I had to modify the model in this software, then I had to like be a hacker man and hack into the computer with an IP address to get the file into the little hard drive, and then I had to do all this weird stuff to make it work, and it like took me like two hours to do what we can now do in about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I was spending all this time and money just trying to make this thing work. And then I realized, it was like, you know, riding a bike instead of a car. I mean, I'd rather drive a car. So, you know, don't be, I mean, and then we talked about ROI. Nope. You get the ROI back within a month or two. So, you know, quit being cheap.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, again, for you, Wally, you're not going to probably cite some studies here, which are important. It's not just about the biocompatibility. For me, I think, you know, that you also have, because of that precision in the post-processing process, we have the ability to make sure that models even have better margins to see crowns, test them out, that sort of thing. And, you know, it affects the whole spectrum, right?
Yeah, you know, it's not that the $100 printers can't produce a phenomenal outcome. It's more that, in my mind, the stuff that comes off the printers look cured, they feel cured, but they're probably not cured. So now you're relying on post-processing to cure them more adequately. If we look at a low-power LCD printer, when it comes off of the printer, for an inexpensive printer, it's around 40% cured. You take that same print on a higher power dental printer that's been validated, the print's going to come off around 60%. So it's a 20% difference right there. Post-processing is relied on to take care of the rest. And so you're cutting yourself short with an inexpensive printer, and you're relying a lot on post-processing. So if you do get a cheap printer, you need to spend the money at least on the very best post-processing light unit that you could possibly ever afford. What I get really upset with is a $100 printer with a $50 nail curing light and then putting stuff in people's mouths. But, you know, I understand parts of the world, a $10,000 printer may be too much.
Yeah,
I think manufacturers need to work together to come out with validated workflows that are accessible to all.
I agree. That's a nice point, though. That's a balanced approach. So,
Christian,
go for it, Chris.
You're obviously a dentist and a technician, and your passion is really the technical workflows. What do you see looking ahead? How do you foresee the role of dental labs evolving as 3D printing technology continues? You know, as it advances, where do you see the lab evolving to adapt to what's happening?
So the printing technology is taking a piece of the work from the lab, and labs are kind of scared about, you know, what they're going to lose if doctors are doing chairside manufacturing. But maybe what they're not seeing is that printing is actually elevating the labs into a completely new role. And what I believe needs to happen is that it's pretty obvious that data capturing is in-house clinics practices, and manufacturing will become in-house clinics and practices because it's just obvious, right? And we don't want to be shipping things around. So what is left is everything that is in between. And labs without a vision, they will just design devices, design restorations that will also be threatened by AI that is kind of designing things little by little. So the big picture here and the big opportunity is for labs to understand that we cannot be just designing appliances. We need to help dentists where dentists need the most help. And that is diagnostics and treatment planning. So labs need to upgrade into diagnostic centers and treatment planning centers and become this hub of collective intelligence, coordinating and integrating the decision-making process, the risk assessment, the different simulations, different possibilities of treatments, you know, using 3D technology at the highest level, things that dentists will never do it, cannot do it, and things that AI is many, many decades away of doing. It's interpreting the problems and developing the comprehensive solutions. So for me, the evolution of technology is just pushing labs into this position where they either gonna shrink into an irrelevant position of designing little things here and there, or step up and really embrace the fact that we can become even more important for the process of treating patients and helping dentists with things that they will never do themselves.
I think as well, Christian, following on from that, I think the whole thing with digital that we've seen over the last few years, and see if you guys agree with this, is that when we all started this journey, and you know, August is leaving the room, but when August came over, which was how many years ago now, Chris?
2016,
yeah, maybe so even earlier, actually.
So say 7 or 8 years ago, right? And when we were doing things for a couple of years before that with stuff together, and so over the last 10 years, we've seen collectively chatting as a group, because you know, we chat a lot online. We started off thinking that we were doing things so that people could get on board with digital better. I think it very quickly became apparent that digital actually is not only a way for people to get on board with more efficient, but it's crucial. And I think that a lot of practices now see the benefit of scanners, but they don't yet see the benefit of printing. And as AI comes in, yeah, I think we're actually in a very lucky position in the, you know, in the whole world that, and I think technicians have to adapt, like you said, Christian, that with AI coming in, if you don't get on board with digital in every aspect and integrate with every part of it, in supportive roles as the lab, as 3D printing users, as scanner users, or whatever, if you don't get on board with it now, then within the next 5 years, when a lot of other, you know, jobs are being replaced with AI, then you know, you're going to be behind the door because other people will have done, because there's not going to be many different jobs left that AI won't affect, you know, as badly as it will with, you know, as least as it will with dentistry, rather. Mm-hmm. So what sort of things do you see coming with AI, guys? Where do you think things are heading with dentistry, printing wise?
More and more we are connecting the scanner to the printer.
Yeah.
It's a straight connection through AI. You're gonna have a menu in the scanner. You're gonna scan and order, right? Mm. Nowadays, if AI can design a bite splint, you scan and you press a button in your iTero, and in 24 hours you have not even that. In 1 hour, 2 hours you have a file that is being printed by your printer chair side.
Yeah.
So this is the future, of course, you know. Everything that doesn't depend on comprehensive collective intelligence, multifactorial decisions,
yeah,
will be taken over by AI. And when you have a solution that is done by AI, you have it immediately. If you have it immediately, you connect to your scanner. If you connect to your scanner, you press a button and your printer is already manufacturing.
Yeah. What's things like for labs over with you in the US, Wally? Are things changing in terms of digital?
Yeah, you know, dentists in America want designs now.
Yeah.
So overnight doesn't work. And so they have a patient sitting in the chair. They want to do 10 veneers. And they want a lab that's willing to remote in, design everything, nest everything, and hit print. Mm. They want that now. The AI is not a threat. It's doing like single unit crowns, some bicards.
Yeah.
But the real future between labs and clinicians is this complex case treatment where they're working synergistically.
Yeah.
They're working together on the case live with the patient sitting in the chair. They're designing together, they're nesting. And I do believe that the future of lab industry is every dentist will eventually have a lab technician in their office.
I think, you know what, to bring it full circle, I hope there's been a few lab techs who've been watching this, and I hope that they realize that the conference is not just for dentists. You know, we've always, with the IDDA group, tried to, you know, kind of meld the dentist lab technician side of things, as I know you guys do. And I think it's incredibly important, if there are lab technicians watching, for them to look forward to both days. So whether the planning going to, you know, the second day is really a lot of lectures focused on the different aspects of 3D printing, but the day one is obviously head honcho here, the DSD covering the integration of 3D printing with DSD. And I think it's really important that they understand that it's very applicable to lab techs to come and watch all of this and see how it all comes together, so that it's not just dentists. This conference is 3D printing, which is dentists, lab techs, and auxiliaries, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think the good point that you've raised there, Adam, is that, you know, the integration of the two is very important, because as a clinician, yes, you can develop the skills to do everything, but you're wasting your clinical time letting somebody who's more specialized and more focused on actually helping you achieve an outcome. It's the commodity there is time, and you can't commit all that time to doing the whole workflow. And this is where that synergy has to come in, you know, for to work for both parties, and actually for the whole dental team, including the auxiliary staff, as you were saying. August, you obviously involve your nurses quite a bit in everything you do. I know you've always been a big advocate of it. Do you want to elaborate a bit on, you know, how you involve your team and how important that becomes as part of the digital world?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm terribly lazy and I'm a big procrastinator. So if I had to do what I do without my team doing most of the heavy lifting, it wouldn't get done, right? You know, I've had patients where I haven't delegated stuff come in and needing a 3D printed flipper and a guide, and I'm like, oh, crap. You know, got to get to the office early to do it. So dentists, I think in general, are probably not like me, but I think a lot of them are. And so, you know, the cleaning of the models, the nesting of the models in the slicer software, loading the printers, changing the resins. I mean, if we had to do it, we would say, this is dumb, I'm not going to do it. So if you don't get your team to actually do that, it's not going to work in your office. So yeah, I mean, I do all the design. I design my surgical guides. I design in AcroCAD, and then my team kind of takes it from there. If it's kind of tricky or I'm just being neurotic, I may, you know, put it into the slicer software and position the supports. But in general, they do it all.
Guys, I'm going to interrupt very quickly. Christian, we've run over quite a bit because it was going to be a half hour. You've got to go. So we'll finish up with a last couple of questions, I think, but it's been a good session. We've covered quite a lot of ground, and I think really anybody who's listening who want to hear more, not only answering the last couple of questions with Wally and August, I think probably they need to come to the conference. They need to come and listen, because we can't cover 2 days of content in a little chat.
We are all so passionate that we want to give everything away, and we will. And I think you guys, for me, just, you know, I'm sorry, I have to run away. There are people knocking at the door here saying, we have to go. I just want to say it's a privilege. You know, some of you I already know, some of you I'm going to meet in person for the first time. We follow each other on social media. It's a great honor, and so cool that we have a great number of people already attending. I hope we're gonna have more people attending, because it's gonna be an amazing sharing of information of, you know, people like you guys that are really doing it. You know, it's not just people that are being paid by companies to speak, but people that, first of all, are doing every single day. You guys do it every single day, this. And because of that, you have an amount of know-how and information that is so precious, because even though philosophically, and I usually talk more conceptually about digital, everything makes so sense when it comes to the concept of using digital. But when it comes to using every day, you guys know better than anybody all the little things that can go wrong and everything that you need to know to make it the best option, the only way to go. So I hope that people will come and benefit from your experience. And above all, we're going to have a lot of fun. So thank you for having me. For
likewise, inviting Christian.
You know, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Have a nice time. Thanks, we'll see you in three or four weeks.
See you.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
See you soon.
Ciao.
Bye-bye. So Adam, obviously, you know, August, Wally, yourself and the team, education is like a very, very big part of everything in confidence and in proceeding and advancing it. So let's put it as advancing in dentistry. Being a great educator that you are, do you want to like maybe highlight a couple of points about how education slots into the daily practice of digital dentistry?
You go, Wally.
Yeah, I mean, without education, it's very hard to implement these things. I mean, you'll be stuck printing models for the rest of your life. And you don't truly unlock the power of digital dentistry until you learn how to connect the scanner to the design, to the printing, and then how to make amazing prosthetics. And so invest in your team. Your team is essential. And when you power them to be able to run with the technology, that's when you truly see the magic, and it becomes less of a thing sitting in the corner or a burden, and more of a centerpiece of your practice.
Yeah. Cool. You've been doing teaching a long time as well, August. Does it feel
valuable? Yeah. Actually, I don't want to say older dentist, because he was my age, reminded me that he went to one of my first classes in CEREC 20 years ago. So that's like, damn, like Wally was like four. it's interesting. I have a pet peeve of lecturers and actually posters on social media. So they'll tell you how awesome they are, and they show these super awesome cases, and everything is perfect, and, you know, angels come down from heaven when they walk into the And I'm not like that. I screw up a lot. And
I think we all do, huh?
Yeah, I think that I'm not smart enough to give up. So if I screw up or I make a mistake, I keep working and figuring out a way to not make that mistake again and see what the right way of doing things are. So I think one thing that's really important in education is we've made all the mistakes, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of dentists that are very tepid about technology. And as soon as they screw up, it is like, I'm out of here. You know, this is dumb.
# learning curve.
Yeah. And you know, those are the same dentists that also like blame their dental assistant for bumping them if their prep sucks or it's always their dad's fault. But I think that one thing that I know Wally and I both bring to the table is we've done a lot of cases, and some of them turn out great. Some of them have not turned out great. and we're able to share, you know, what are the pitfalls and how do we overcome those pitfalls? And what are the limitations, frankly, of some things that are 3D printed?
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I'm not going to say who. We had one comment from somebody online that was pretty much like that, calling things like the diploma we do in the UK worthless diploma. But from my perspective, I'm going to call this, and I think you know who I'm talking about there, August. But the thing for me is when we look at things like education, it's all about, it's not, I like to think it's a bit of a selfless thing. It's not about the giving back or money. And although obviously, you know, that comes into it to a lot of lectures. The problem really is that I don't think people appreciate what it's like when you see what that does to people that you've taught. And when you see the results that they do, that you don't talk about, that you don't post about, that you just see the effect of what you've taught on them later down the line. And I'm going to give a shout out to two of our guys, and they'll know who I'm talking about by now, Andrew and Jonathan, that we do things with, and they're going to do some more things with us in the UK. And that when they first started the journey with us, and they did the masters with us a few years ago, 5 years ago, Chris, and listen, when they started, one of them was on the verge of retiring, and they we're basically thinking, that's it. We're not going to, we thought we'd like this. We're not sure if we're going to like it. We thought we'd do it. But we're going to retire soon anyway. And then it's completely changed how they do the practice, using digital, using all of the things. We've basically given everything to them, and they've covered everything we've done. And they've grown in their own rights, and they're doing their own thing. And seeing what they do, and seeing not only that, but the passion that they have for what they do, and them telling us we're not retiring anytime soon, and that's a beautiful thing. And you don't get that with just doing dentistry. And for anybody out there who wants to get into teaching and showing the passion, 100%. If you're good at it, if you're not good at it, then maybe don't teach it. But the reality is, if you're good at it, and if you're so inclined, teaching is going to be so rewarding for you. But that's just my perspective anyway. We should do a couple of questions. We've got a few that we've racked up. So, guys, we've answered a few of them. The guys have been asking them as we go, but we've talked about that. Let's talk about the future. We talked about that. Okay. With the current state of things for yourself, Wally and August, what is the biggest limitation in 3D printing, no matter whether it's validated or not, that you have now, your biggest bugbear that you have about 3D printing that people may be aware of, may not be aware of as they're getting into it, so that they're prepared as they get into it, listening to this, coming to the conference, they buy a printer, and it's that bugbear that you just can't get away from that you would really like to see change in the future? Difficult one.
I'll let Wally go first.
Well, nesting. Yeah. There's all these AI nesting softwares, automatic cloud nesting, but none of them really work where they're completely like, I don't have to think about this. My assistant could just hit next. I know it's going to be perfect. We're close, but that's a big hiccup right now, because I want to delegate. I don't want to look at it, and it's not quite there.
That'll be nice then, though. That will be nice.
Yeah.
I think that's what Dentsply were hoping to do with their, you know, big things. I won't talk about that, but the idea, I think, that they wanted to make it more accessible to auxiliaries. And I think when that day clicks, where it can just click like that, that's going to be a good day, right?
Yeah.
What about you, August?
I think the problem I have right now, but it's getting rectified, is the shades and translucency of permanent crown resins. I think they're just a little too chalky. They're kind of like old Bruxer, zirconia. And then, you know, there was a while back, there was some big talk with different companies coming out with variable translucency printers. So modifying the amount of light that's delivered to the restoration on different layers. But they didn't really went anywhere with that. So I think that in the future, better shades and then variable translucency, I think, is great. I know Wally does a lot of veneers and uses Onyx Tough, which is actually, when it's thin, is a nice translucent materials. But I'm not conservative like Wally. That's why I'm really good at implants. So I drill off the top, so my restoration. Yeah.
August.
Build it low. Layer
everything's.
Yeah.
August, you're conservative, man. I've seen your little.
I think August, we're gonna miss you. Though.
Well
oh,
done.
Yeah. That's just the stuff I post.
Oh. Well. Okay, I think we cracked them all. Then
we've got a couple.
Of, okay, we've got some more.
We've got a couple of more questions here. James has asked, will 3D printers ever get really fast, e.g. print a temporary crown and take 2 to 3 minutes with no post-processing needed?
Yeah, I mean, where 3D printers are fast right now is I could print 10 crowns in 10 minutes, okay, currently. And the post-processing on those is a 1 minute wash and a 6 minute cure. So I could do 10 crowns and 16, 17 right? I could do one crown in that same amount of time. So right now where printers are efficient are with bigger things, multiple units, quadrants, smiles. I do think we'll get to the point where we'll have sub 1 minute single unit crown print, but I don't see a time when we could get rid of at least a 5 minute cure after.
Yeah. So also, I think to put it in perspective with that question is, if you change the volume of what you are doing, then say, for example, if you can do 10 crowns in 16 minutes, then technically it's 1.6 minutes per crown. And that's how a lot of the printing manufacturers sell them as well. They, but yeah, I think if we're talking about single prints, then it will still take the same amount of time. So I think that's a good answer to that question. The next question is, which permanent resin for crowns, inlays, veneers have you all found to be the best in longevity and aesthetics?
I'm going to let Wally answer that because he's the science guy.
There's a few that come to mind. Pacdent Rodin Sculpture is a good, highly filled ceramic material. Sprint Ray's ceramic crown material and also their Onyx Tough are very aesthetic. I do my veneers with Onyx Tough, print them 300 microns.
Do you know what, Wally, while you're answering this, sorry to interrupt, why don't you explain very briefly for the audience who won't be as aware, the difference between what we used to have as crown materials and the current generation of crown materials that have ceramics in them?
Yeah, I mean, we've come so far so fast. We now have materials with over 50% ceramic nanoparticles. These particles are functionalized to the resin matrix. In the past, we had materials with less than 20% ceramic, and they weren't functionalized, which means they were just floating in the resin and not actually connected to the resin. So we have better filler particle chemistry. We also have better oligomer chemistry, where we're having long chain